Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchup, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. I'm Manu Fehn and I'm joined by two people today, Matt Ford and Stefan Biankowski. Stefan, back from his holiday. I'll start with you. I know you were on a preview show last week. Brief break from your holiday. We appreciated that. But how's it going? How is your first Monday back?
Yeah, not bad. I have some bit of a throat infection or cold or something, so you know, not great, but typical, I suppose. There's nothing great about the first Monday back at work after a holiday, so I think I'll just leave it there and say I'm glad the day's done and I can go about talking about football, German football, on a podcast for fun.
Yeah, it sounds great. It's typical for post-holidays to come back with an infection, right? It's just how it is. Matt, how's it going with you? How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. I think I'm probably waiting for my infection to kick in. It's been a long weekend. Not that much sleep, and it's going to be a busy week. So yeah, I sort of feel like whatever Stefan's got now, I'm probably going to end up getting it at some point this week.
Isn't that nice? I mean,
very optimistic start to the podcast. Yeah.
Very optimistic.
I'm just really excited.
I'm gonna add that I'm heading over there on Thursday and I'm gonna be on a 10-hour flight, so I'm pretty sure I'll pick up an infection too. Here we go. That's how it goes, right? No. Let's get the small part of the podcast out of the way. We have a few big topics today. Want to touch on Leipzig Dortmund. We want to touch on the relegation battle. You know, two big Champions League games coming up for German football, of course, and that's where the Dortmund-Leipzig game or the Leipzig-Dortmund game will provide some interesting context. But before we get there, Matt, Stefan, are Leverkusen ever going to lose another game again?
Yes, I'll go with the easy answer there. It's maybe not this season, but I think they will eventually. But it was obviously a crazy game. I didn't actually get a chance to watch this one. As I was explaining to our subscribers, I was watching it on my phone as I was walking the dog. And then I almost got ran over because I was so engrossed in it. I was walking down a country road and then this big truck came up behind me. So I thought, all right, better put that away. And then I kind of forgot all about it. And then got home to find that Leverkusen were behind. And then I tuned in to kind of think, well, is this finally going to be the chance to kind of, you know, see them finally lose a game? And sure enough, it was anything but. It is interesting, though. I did find myself, and maybe this is just the kind of inherent cynic in me, which I'm sure subscribers and listeners are well accustomed to by now, but I've kind of got to the point with Leverkusen and these performances, and I'm now actually almost beginning to worry for them, in the sense that, not for this season, obviously, because, you know, the job's done. And, you know, they've won the Bundesliga and they've got a great shot of winning, you know, the treble, I suppose. But And I even feel bad mentioning this before the season's even finished and before we've even moved on to the next season. But I do kind of wonder if these tiny, tiny, tiny margins that have helped them along the way this season, not to the extent that they've been the difference between them winning the title and them not winning the title, but you do see it so often in football where you see a team that are just seemingly perfect. Everything's working well for them. Their karma or whatever is just flowing through them. Everything's just ticking along, and then all of a sudden there's like a 5 or 10% dip and the wheels fall off. And I'm not here to suggest that's going to happen for Leverkusen. I'm not trying to kind of rain on their parade by any means, but the more it keeps happening, the more I keep wondering. It's like, well, we've seen this in football a lot where everyone takes the summer off, some people go off to international tournaments, maybe some players are sold, blah blah blah. But I don't know, I just wonder if in like 12 months time we'll look back on this and think that magic that we keep seeing from this season was just impossible to maintain. But like I said, maybe that's just an insanely cynical way to look at this kind of performance.
No, I think you're onto something, actually, because I think that teams are starting to figure out this Leverkusen side. We saw it with West Ham a little bit. I think the West Ham were just not good enough or didn't have the stamina to last for the full 90 minutes to play the football that is required to beat Leverkusen, right? But I do think that teams will come up with methods to beat them. And Stuttgart is one of those teams. I mean, Stuttgart have done this now, have gone toe-to-toe with them 3 times, right? And yeah, they only drew 2 twice and lost the one in the cup, but you know, you had the feeling that they really were up there with them the entire way through it. But that's up to Alonso to figure out different ways next year, right? That's maybe also why he's staying, so he can prove that he can find other ways to win games for this team. And, you know, I wonder this too. I mean, they're at a stage of the season now where focus is clearly no longer on the Bundesliga. So obviously some of these games are going to end in draws rather than wins. But yeah, Matt, what do you think?
I thought that analogy from Stefan of him wasn't an analogy. The simultaneous event of him walking down the road and the truck coming up. That was a bit like Stuttgart going into injury time 2-1 up, and then the truck on the country lane, which is by Leverkusen, comes in behind. I think, I mean, my connection cut out for a second. I'm not sure if you mentioned the exact figure, but I heard earlier today that's 15 injury time or late goals in all competitions for by Leverkusen this season. It's not like the meaningless ones. I mean, I suppose late goals are that rarely meaningless. So it has been impressive. I did feel sorry for Stuttgart because, yeah, as Manu said, they're the team which is, I think, of any team in Germany or even around Europe this year who have pushed Leverkusen the closest. The 3 games, you know, 2 in the league, 1 in the cup, have been 3 of the best games in German football this season in any competition. They've absolutely been up there. And at least in the Bundesliga, Stuttgart have come absolutely closer than Bayern, closer than Dortmund. Even closer than Dortmund, even though they also, you know, they also came within seconds, didn't they? But Stuttgart have come closest, and I thought it would have been fitting, actually, had Stuttgart held on for another 10-15 seconds. It would have been very, very fitting had that team been the team to finally beat by Leverkusen. But it's not come to that. And as you said, I don't see to cynically as Stefan that this is, you know, Leverkusen finally getting caught out or anything like that. I see it more like Manu, to be honest, that this is simply the next challenge that Leverkusen and Simon Rolfers and Xavi Alonso are going to have to deal with. They are going to keep the bulk of their squad. There have been suggestions of, Alejandro Grimaldo looking at a move away, but I think the majority will stay. And it'll be they'll have to deal with teams setting up differently against them, perhaps, you know, taking the West Ham second leg example. But I'm sure it's a challenge they'll relish. I'll certainly relish watching how they go about dealing with that. It'd be really interesting, and based on current evidence, I'd back them to find a solution.
I think the Grimaldo thing needs to be contextualized real quick. I think he said that he one day would like to play in Spain.
Was it one day? Okay, yeah.
Which means also, I don't blame him. I mean, like, he's Spanish, right? I don't think he's ever played at a high-level club in Spain. You hear this from German players all the time when they're abroad, that they one day want to play in the Bundesliga.
The Spanish Robin Gosens.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great example.
Let's hope he's more consistent over the coming years than Robin Gosens has been for Leverkusen and potentially Real Madrid or Barcelona's sake.
Yeah. Or wherever else he's going to go. So Leverkusen keep on marching on. They still have the chance. So no longer have the chance to get the highest point total in Bundesliga history. That is now gone. But they can still finish the season undefeated, which is no one has ever done that. And I think, you know, it's probably a record that they would like to get. All right. So as I said, we have to chat about Leipzig Dortmund, context of Champions League, get there in a moment. What I just mentioned too, that Bayern Munich very much got the job done against Eintracht Frankfurt. That's as easy and professional of a game as you can see. Thomas Tuchel and Uli Hoeneß, of course, getting into one another. Great. Just create some more noise around one of the most important games in recent club history, won't you? But that's just Bayern Munich for you. The game itself, yeah, pretty straightforward. I think, I don't know if we need to touch much on Uli Hoeneß and Thomas Tuchel and what's happening here. I think this is something that we've dissected in many different layers. We also chatted about the Substack, unless one of you two wants to jump real quickly in here and have a say.
Well, I'm just going to jump in and say that my newsletter is on it for tomorrow. So you can let me line me up there to kind of pitch that. It's not just on Hoeneß and Tuchel, but it's on Bayern as a whole, and questioning whether Hoeneß's remarks have come from a point of, shall we say, maybe Tuchel has been kind of touching a nerve recently in terms of maybe shining the light on aspects of Bayern that haven't been functioning as well as they have done in previous seasons or years. So yes, the survivors can have a read of that, and I'll obviously go into a lot more depth in that newsletter. But of course, if Matt wants to talk about it now, then obviously feel free.
Not got a lot to add, and certainly got nothing that would overly complement what you're probably writing tomorrow. It's Uli Hoeneß. You can't keep out, can you? And that's always double edged sword at Bayern Munich, and has been for decades. Obviously, it's his club, and it's his, you know, very much down to his personality and the way he controls and pulls the strings at Bayern. They have a lot to thank for that. But it also means on the other side that he simply can't help himself, can he? I don't think it's particularly helpful. Criticising Thomas Tuchel like that, particularly in just a few days before, arguably Bayern's biggest game in half a decade.
Yeah.
Not particularly helpful, but I think we'll be able to contextualise that a lot better after the first leg, and certainly after the second leg.
Yeah, I think maybe it's also a response by Uli Hoeneß to this petition that has now reached 15,000 signatures to keep Thomas Juppel Tuchel at Bayern Munich, which is hilarious. I mentioned this on the preview show last week. I was tagged in it and told to spread the word on Twitter. I didn't. It got to 15,000 signatures without my retweet. I just want to say that. And maybe Uli Hoeneß responding a little bit to the fans here, as he often does. You have to always take that into context too, and usually when he responds to fans, it gets emotional, and it did, and the timing was terrible. Anyways,
Manu, does that mean that people are responding to our convincing arguments regarding Thomas Tuchel that we were talking about on the Bayern Munich Dortmund podcast? Maybe we've had an effect. Maybe we convinced people. Now there's a petition.
I will respond to that saying that lots of other people also have eyes in their head. I mean, yeah, we've done so many shows on this. I mean, if you're interested into a deep dive into Bayern Munich restructuring and all our arguments, I think Matt and I, what was it, an hour and 10 minutes last week that we spent on this topic? I don't think our opinion has changed over the course of the last 6 days. So I urge people who haven't yet to listen to our big restructuring podcast where we went a deep dive into Dortmund and Bayern and what's going on behind the scenes. And also, I think Marie came on last week, right? When we talked about Ralf Rangnick and his imminent appointment, all of that is there. And I don't think anything has changed in the days since. So if you haven't listened to it already, I urge people to listen to it. It's really good. I'm not saying that because I'm on it, because I had great guests helping me. Let's talk about Leipzig against Dortmund. Noise from the other team in the Champions League. Dortmund ahead of a really big Champions League fixture. This was the final for fourth place. A fourth place that is no longer really that important, or doesn't feel that important anymore, because of where we are at in terms of the Bundesliga potentially getting the fifth spot. I think it requires one win and two draws in for the teams that are still in the competition, so in international competitions, so Dortmund, Bayern, Leverkusen. These teams collectively have to just collect one more win and two draws. I think that's possible. And even that is only necessary if the English teams win all their remaining games, which, you know, that's Aston Villa in the Conference League. So it looks extremely likely at the moment. And with that in mind, was the 4-1 defeat to Leipzig written in the stars because this Dortmund team only plays well when it matters, Stefan?
Well, I think that's debatable considering how well they've played in the Bundesliga, because they've been plenty of important games this season which they've lost considerably. The only game they managed to win was the one in Munich that didn't matter. But yeah, you could definitely make a case that Dortmund didn't seem to care about this game. The classic Dortmund fashion, once they knew the money was in the bank, they kind of gave up on the pitch, it felt like. And, you know, it was just a match that I just kind of, you just end up kind of throwing your hands up in there and worrying for any Dortmund fans that you care to know or worry about, because it was a match which they must have found themselves pulling their hair out. To be fair to Terzic, obviously missing quite a lot of players. I think they seriously missed, Madsen on the left, which in turn meant Ryerson had to move from the right over to the left. And then obviously Wolf came in, and I think both of those fullbacks over the course of the game not only struggled defensively, but they just offered absolutely nothing in an attacking sense either. And it felt like a game in which Dortmund weren't really entirely sure how to attack Leipzig, and it was a game that I think, you know, and you said it's quite a lot, man. You've made this case that you think Leipzig probably have the second best squad in Germany this season. Man for man, I thought they had a much better team than Dortmund in this game. And, you know, when that kind of third goal went in a couple of minutes into the second half, in fact, I think it was only maybe 55 seconds into the second half, and then, you know, Mats Hummels then goes off injured I don't know, I've actually followed up on that injury, but it's a serious one. But it was more or less a strain from having to try and rush back from a counter-attack, which Leipzig scored from. I really did kind of think this is quite a scary situation for Dortmund, because at that point it felt like Leipzig could have went on and scored another 4, 5, 6 or 7-1 or something like that. That's really how much Dortmund were on the ropes at that point. And it was just a game in which, you know, we've seen this time and time again, where Terzic basically has one plan for a game and it either works to a T, and, you know, they pull off major impressive results in the Champions League, or it doesn't work and Dortmund just look completely lost on the pitch. I just thought it was a really poor performance, and, you know, maybe, you know, the power brokers at Dortmund and, you know, sitting in the boardroom in the Westfalenstadion kind of chuckling to themselves, knowing that it doesn't really matter. It was quite notable that the camera did routinely cut to Vatska throughout the match, and he was sitting there with a T-shirt on with his sunglasses enjoying the sun in Saxony. And he didn't look entirely troubled watching the game himself, so maybe he does know that that Champions League spot is secured and none of this really matters. But yeah, I think it would be an extremely difficult football match for Dortmund fans to watch this season, because they've had so many highs and then so many lows like this one.
Man, naturally, Dortmund are going to beat PSG now.
I mean, I think there's some pretty clear warning signs from that RB game going into the PSG game, particularly the the vulnerability that Dortmund showed facing counter-attacks. It's not the first time we've said that this season, particularly with the absence of Sabitzer in midfield. I mean, Stefan mentioned Ian Mattsson not playing, and that certainly cost Dortmund in an offensive sense, but I thought throughout midfield as well. In the past few weeks, Marcel Sabitzer has been Borussia Dortmund's best player, particularly the Atletico Madrid second leg. And without him, in that midfield, I thought, I think you saw Dortmund's lack of pace in there and vulnerability to counter-attacks, particularly in the second half, where, like we said, RB really could have scored 3, 4, 5 on the counter-attack had Javi Schimmel's finishing been a little bit more clinical. And then again, that's nothing that we don't know. About Borussia Dortmund. We've seen and heard that before. I thought the first 20 minutes was actually okay from what I saw. I thought that you could see a sense of plan in Füllkrug dropping deeper to win headers. Sancho was busy and was involved, scored a fantastic goal. It's a really good finish. That was actually his 40th Bundesliga goal altogether, which means that he overtakes Tony Woodcock on to become the most prolific English striker in Bundesliga history, with 40 goals. I thought that aside, there really wasn't much for Borussia Dortmund to write home about. Similarly, from a Red Bull perspective, similar issues there. Like we said, great squad, names great on paper, still maddeningly inconsistent, and still seemingly with issues with their clinicalness up front and really converting chances. So had they shown more consistency in that regard over the entire season, I don't think they would have even been in a battle for 4th/5th place, and that would have been wrapped up long ago. As it is, it doesn't matter anyway, as we've said. But I think, given those Dortmund vulnerabilities on the counter-attack that RB posed to them, I'm not sure if that stands them in such good stead against the likes of Mbappe coming up. So we'll see how that goes this week. But then again, it will be a slightly different Dortmund team.
It looks like Hummels is going to be okay for the game. It was actually a cut on his shin that
he gets
took
a
him
stamp
out.
On his leg, doesn't he? I think it's not intentional, but it's a little painful.
Yeah, and it had to be, he needed stitches for it, hence the substitution. So it looks like he should be okay to play. I think the context of the PSG game is so interesting here. Because at the end of the day, that seems to be what matters more than anything else right now. And I think Terzic came out quite aggressively after the game, saying that, of course, this result is going to bother them. But I reckon the fallout of this would have been so much bigger if this fifth place wasn't in the Bundesliga's hands right now, right? That extra Champions League spot. Because at the end of the day, should it really matter that fifth is good enough for the Champions League this year? Isn't the Dortmund's goal every year to be at least in the top two? I mean, that is really what this club is supposed to be. This is Germany's second largest club by fan volume and in terms of media presence and all that sort of thing. And they're going to finish fifth now. There's no way that's acceptable, Stefan.
No, it's not. And I think the other interesting aspect of this as well is that Leipzig are actually beginning to build up quite an impressive kind of track record against Dortmund. They've now won both games against them this season. They won 3 out of 2 last season, obviously knocking them out of the German Cup. They won the 2 before that, the season before as well. And it's almost like we're seeing this kind of same kind of solidification of that kind of that. In inverted commas, their classicer that between Bayern Munich, where the international media obviously kind of go nuts for, but people like ourselves and people who listen to the show kind of roll their eyes when that fixture comes around, because we know, not just in terms of the quality on the pitch, but also psychologically, Dortmund just never stand a chance in that game for one reason or another. And I just think it's really interesting that you can almost kind of see that beginning to take place with this fixture as well, which I would imagine, and Matt would have much more to say on this, but that must be something that must really, really grind the gears of Dortmund fans, who obviously can have a lot of respect for Bayern Munich as a football club and their fans, and that's a long-standing history between the clubs. But for a club like RB Leipzig and what they stand for in the eyes of Dortmund fans, to have that kind of record beginning to kind of really grow arms and legs and kind of develop into something, least of all with a head coach at the helm who was kind of laughed out of Dortmund for one reason or another, either fairly or unfairly, I'm still not sure, the jury's still out on that one, is a fascinating kind of subplot to all this. And it's something we'll also have to keep an eye on, because it's obviously Leipzig for so long have been the club that have tried to usurp Dortmund into that second place. Whether they've been able to do that or not is, I think, up for debate. I think both clubs have kind of gone back and forth in that. I think both clubs have kind of shown a degree of lacking ambition in the last kind of 5 or 10 years, considering the money they have at hand and the players and the head coaches they've had as well. So it's just a fascinating kind of little mini rivalry here, which, you know, I can understand that Dortmund fans really would not want to, you know, dwell on or encourage, but nonetheless it is there, whether it's on the pitch or off the pitch. And it's a fascinating little subplot to German football, I think, right now. And right now, Leipzig have the upper hand.
Yeah, particularly in those games in Leipzig, Dortmund have got a pretty terrible record there. I think the record is slightly better at home, although obviously the exception definitely being this season. They've been pretty comprehensively outplayed on both occasions. If there are any caveats for Dortmund, the goals did come at pretty bad times for them, you know, right before half-time and directly after half-time. Like we said, I do ultimately, as much as it was a comprehensive and impressive and a good win for RB, and probably should see them, you know, safe in fourth for whatever sort of symbolic meaning that has. I ultimately think it's still a pretty disappointing season for both, for slightly different reasons, and we have touched on it throughout the season. I mentioned just before this, RB's issues with converting chances. I mean, the amount of chances they actually create, particularly on the counter attack with the players they have, they are, despite everything, wildly inconsistent in actually putting those chances away. And we've also discussed before about how with the unique structures and possibilities available to them, they really shouldn't be sliding in behind Stuttgart and Bayer Leverkusen. They've got they spend a lot more money, a much bigger budget, it's completely different structures. So for them, despite it being a good weekend and two good results against Dortmund this season, I don't necessarily see them, ringing bells of celebration on the Altes Rathaus in the middle of town. As for Dortmund, the issues are pretty much the same. As to whether people see it as a rivalry, I really don't know. Maybe it depends who you ask. Maybe perhaps in some of their heads, it does rank a little bit that this club who they have arguably led some of the rejection towards over the years, consistently beat them, particularly those games in Leipzig. On the other hand, Dortmund's regular hardcore still haven't been to a single game in Leipzig. They don't really even recognise that the fixture takes place, so I'm not particularly sure half of them are bothered on that level. So maybe it depends who you ask.
Last time I checked, those games still count for points in the Bundesliga table.
Yeah.
So if I was a fan, I would be bothered, even if I don't like the construct of the club, because it doesn't excuse the fact that your own team has lost.
It really does depend who you ask. I mean, it's all right you're saying that. Obviously, it's true. But trust me, it depends who you ask. There's no shortage of people around Dortmund and also Munich, Cologne, who they simply, when that fixture comes around, they do something else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can debate that maybe in great depth at some point. But, I do think you make a really important point here about Leipzig and where they are at in the standings, because I do agree with you, fourth is probably not good enough. Uwe Schroeder had said a couple of weeks ago that Leverkusen show what's possible, right? That was an exact quote. And that is, for me, a statement towards the team and the coaching staff to... That was maybe the expectation here, right? I mean, Timo Werner, he's no longer at the club, but he said that last year, that Leipzig essentially missed a chance to win the title last year, because of the many chances and lost opportunities. What was it in the end? 5 points. So, you know, this is a really important point to make. And Matt, you're spot on. This is a team or club or organization or franchise, whatever you want to call it, with enormous resources. And we do expect, therefore, that they do better in the Bundesliga standings.
We have discussed them before, haven't we, quite a lot, obviously, but it's the high turnover of players. I mean, even this season, Xavi Simons is only on loan, which is actually a bit unusual for they don't tend to go for loan players. I'm not actually sure what the status is with that, whether they intend to turn that into a permanent deal. Maybe you two know more. I mean, also the likes, Shimachan in this season, Šeško in this season, and then the players who you've already mentioned have come and gone, Gavel has come back, but others have sort of used that platform for one season before quickly moving on. Really high turnover of players, also with coaches, that can't help when it comes to consistency of converting chances and consistency of performance. When obviously, you know, with a squad of that quality on paper, you're absolutely going to have a certain number of games in the season where you blow opposition away. And that absolutely happens. That stands to reason. But ultimately, I think the work done in Leverkusen and Stuttgart.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This season is miles more impressive than that done at RB, particularly in the season where Bayern have been so weak.
You made that point on social media, Stefan.
I was going to mention that exactly there, actually. I did a note on Substack, which for anyone who doesn't follow, Substack is more or less like a mini article, really. It's like an extended tweet talking exactly about that, really. And, you know, there was a rumour, it was off the back of a story on Get German Football News that was kind of reporting how many of the current Leipzig players have release clauses. You know, Mohamed Simakan's got 70 million euro one, Sesko's is for 50 million, Loya Penda's for 80 million, and I basically just kind of went off on a rant about that, explaining why this just underlines why Leipzig are not a serious club, because the only way they can seemingly bring players to this club is by promising them, not just hinting, but promising to the tune of putting in writing, release clauses, which more usually are below market value, in my opinion, that putting these things in writing so the players know for a fact that they'll be sold at a certain point in the season or a certain point in the future. And, you know, it depends really your point of view, obviously. I completely respect people who follow German football, and especially football fans in Germany who go to games and they just do not appreciate at all what Leipzig stand for. I completely get that. But I think if Leipzig wanted to try and make some sort of argument for themselves, it should be based on sporting merit, in the hope that, yes, we're owned by Red Bull and yes, we have more money than most clubs, but we're going to try and actually win something. And I think the most pathetic thing about this situation is that they don't even have that. And I just keep going back to what I see from the Formula One team. And, you know, Christian Horner is an individual who's in the headlines for all the wrong reasons right now. Obviously, what's going on with his personal life, but I just kind of keep coming back to from what I've seen of what he's done with that Red Bull team in Formula One, I can't imagine that he would walk into that football club and think any of this is acceptable. And I only make that argument because obviously what he's built for the Red Bull racing team is a team that demand to win no matter what. And I just do not get that ethos from the football club at all. And it just kind of chimes with what Matt was saying, that there's a huge turnover of players, a huge turnover of managers. And it's not entirely dissimilar to the situation at Dortmund, where as long as everyone gets paid at the end of the season, no one seems to be all that bothered about whether they actually moved an inch forward or backwards in the league table. Quite happy to sit second or third and just kind of keep lapping up the Champions League money every year. So it's, again, another extremely cynical take from me. I think that's 2 out of 2 so far in this podcast, so let's keep it going.
No, I'm going to try not to add to the cynicism around Red Bull, but might find that difficult. But it is true. We've been through it before. I think it's interesting that we're talking about this on the weekend where the suggestions and the talks about Ralf Rangnick and Bayern Munich are growing ever louder, given that, you know, obviously it was under Rangnick in that sporting director role, or that omnipresent, you know, overlord role that he had across the whole organisation, that RB had the most successful years, in inverted commas, you know, the promotion to the Bundesliga, you know, that first half of the season, they took it by storm, then coming second on a couple of occasions, really making a push to become that second force, to really overtake Dortmund as that sort of official long-term second force in German football and challenging Bayern. But they've never actually gone any further than that. If anything, I would argue that they've taken a few steps back behind that. And I wonder if, maybe it's a podcast in its for itself, we've already talked about it quite a lot, haven't we, and just on this one, but in the absence of Rangnick, in the absence of that oversteering, oversight role, a lot of it was sort of handed over to Oliver Mintzlaff, then obviously he's also moved on higher up the Red Bull hierarchy to a more, multi-sport oversight position that he has. And in behind has come, yeah, this not just a managerial merry-go-round on the bench, but also in the boardroom in terms of, you know, Markus Krusch has come and gone. Mintzlaff in that role, he's come and gone. Max Eberl was there for 6 months, come and gone. Rangnick has popped back a couple of times and then moved on again, seemingly now for good. He's no longer involved with Red Bull. Yeah, absolutely no consistency. And in the middle of all that, I mean, I don't think he had much influence in the direct running of RB Leipzig and the Bundesliga team, but Dietrich Mateschitz is passing away as well. And if you want to talk about unsavoury characters in the mould of Horner at the Formula One team, then there's another rather unsavoury character in Herr Mateschitz, with all due respect. Strange organisation. Maybe it's worth us digging into it with some more sort of concrete evidence, but... yeah, interesting, but maybe a shame to have to mention it all and be so cynical about it on a weekend where it's been one of their most impressive performances of the season. And I think we probably are generally fans of Marco Rose. I think he's a good coach. I personally like the way he tries to play football. He probably does have a good connection to the club. That'd be an interesting one too. Maybe, I don't know why they don't make more from a marketing point of view of Marco Rose being a born and bred Leipziger. He's from the city. He's played for the city's football teams. He's in his hometown. They don't seem to make much of that. That would be a pretty easy way to win points with the local population and maybe people further afield as well.
And he's super charismatic.
Find it strange that they struggle, like Stefan said, with the high turnover of players. They struggle to sell that location of Leipzig now. Okay, yeah, this Saxony, Eastern Germany, perhaps not as built up, not as economically powerful as certain areas in the West, but nevertheless, it is a very attractive area in terms of countryside and, you know, things to see and do. Leipzig itself is a beautiful city, and absolutely a very livable city and some very lovely neighbourhoods. You're also not that far from Berlin. I mean, so I wonder why they also seem to struggle to make that location attractive. I mean, obviously Leverkusen do a decent job of putting all their players in houses in Dusseldorf. Perhaps Red Bull could maybe look at housing some players in some southern Berlin suburbs. I don't know.
I think Wolfsburg tried that, but then one of their star strikers kept going to the casinos every night, so maybe that's the problem.
You've also got that risk in Wolfsburg, haven't you? The classic joke that there was a joke of the ICE train from Berlin that went through Wolfsburg, often kept forgetting to stop in Wolfsburg.
I'm not sure
how much truth there actually was in that, but I think it did happen once.
I think that is very harsh. Also, I've tried to catch an ICE train that refused to stop in Wolfsburg.
So it is a thing. They do forget to stop. To be fair, might not be Wolfsburg's fault. That might just be Manu's fault.
No. Chris Williams was there too.
The point I'm making is the ICE driver might not have liked the look of you guys, not Wolfsburg itself.
Yeah, I'm sure. That is the reason Williams is no longer on the show. I was going to say, too, it's probably very harsh to compare Wolfsburg and Leipzig, because Leipzig is a stunning city, and it's probably the biggest success story of East Germany, period.
Sorry to jump in there, Manu, but I'd also just add, like, every time I go to Leipzig, I'm always stunned by the architecture, the beautiful buildings.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think it's far more picturesque than Berlin, for example. I know Berlin's a much bigger city, it's got much more going for it, but in terms of just sheer aesthetics, when you walk out of the kind of the main train station and start heading towards the stadium, I think Leipzig's stunning.
The train station, too. Stunning.
Yeah, huge. Yeah, absolutely huge as well.
By all means, I'm happy to. I'll talk about Leipzig all day long. I mean, I used to live there, and I think it's a wonderful city. That train station is actually a nerdy fact for you. I believe the biggest train station by square meters in Europe. So impressive. And if anyone is interested, before we finish this section, this weekend coming up on Sunday is the Leipzig Derby. If anyone fancies watching that, Lokomotive against Chemie. So. High-class football.
I think a deep dive into Leipzig is something that we need to look into, especially once the Champions League games are done, right? Because the bonus shows obviously this week are on the Champions League fixtures, but that is definitely something that we need to look into. I think maybe my final thoughts on this, I had a couple while you guys were speaking. Ralf Rangnick is a person who left Hoffenheim because Hoffenheim's owner at the time, Dietmar Hopp, agreed to sell his star midfielder, Luis Gustavo, to Bayern Munich, and he's also someone who probably left Leipzig because he didn't think his ambitions there could be met. He's a person who doesn't think, he finds and develops talent, but he doesn't necessarily always want to move these players on. He wants to keep them, which is probably why he is a great fit for Bayern in that regard. Not in all matters, but that ambition probably fits well with Bayern Munich. And also when it comes to Leipzig, and this is, I think, why we need to do a deep dive into, Mario Gomez is going to take a very big role there soon. And I think from what I gather speaking to him, he's a very ambitious person himself. And it's going to be interesting to see how he fits into there. Matt, I'm with you. We need to talk about Leipzig a bit more. Unfortunately, we can't, because we still have one more big topic, and that's the relegation battle. You were at Köln, Mainz, or... rather, Mainz-Köln, a game where they were on the brink of relegation. They would have been 8 points out if they had lost it. Now it's just 5. Yay. How optimistic are we for Köln? Because this still looks dire. Very, very dire, Matt.
It was a weird one. I mean, it's also the reason I'm so tired. It's been such a long weekend watching football all over Cologne. Fortuna Köln on Friday night, Victoria Köln on Saturday, and then down to Mainz for FC Köln on Sunday. And it's a lot of Köln. There were quite a few people that did all three games. People were referring to it as the Kölsche Dreier, which I'm going to translate as Cologne hat trick. But if anyone does speak German, then feel free to have a giggle at what that could also mean. But let's leave it at that. Let's leave it. Let's move on. the Mainz game was a weird one, because what's actually happened in the end is neither of what people were expecting, really. People had planned, for two outcomes. One was the absolute must. Cologne had to win to have any chance of keeping their survival hopes alive. Would have kept them, I think, within 5 points with a win, and 5 points of Mainz. If my math is correct, I'm not sure.
No, that's what they're at right now.
Oh, is that what they are now?
A win would have kept them within 2 points.
Okay. That was the big hope, even though it was considered unlikely.
3 points. 3 points.
Three points it would have been, that's true.
Okay.
Be considered unlikely.
I was told there's no math.
Yeah.
How many sports journalists does it take to calculate or count to 5?
3, apparently.
Yeah. Obviously, but then the other scenario, the more likely one, was that, you know, Cologne would lose in Mainz, leaving them potentially 8 points behind with just 9 points left to play for, which would have been effectively the nail in the coffin. It would have been as good as over. Ultimately, what's happened, thanks to Florian Kainz's last injury time penalties, neither of those things have happened, and somehow Cologne have found themselves in having a 1 week, 2 week maybe extension to this purgatory, where they're still highly unlikely to save themselves, and yet still not quite down. It was an interesting game, I thought. I thought, for a relegation battle, actually a very watchable game. Decent start from FC, probably had the better of the first sort of 40-15 minutes. But then again, as always, creating absolutely nothing up front. I mean, they have had some bad luck with injuries in that department this season. David Selke injured for large periods, Mark Oot injured for large periods, came on the second half against Mainz. Luca Waldschmidt injured for large periods, was fit to start against Mainz. But it's left them largely reliant on Stefan Tiggers and Adam Jan up front, who, with all due respect, simply don't have the quality. The quality is absolutely not there, and it's a shame, because you saw the first sort of 15 minutes where FC did knock the ball around quite well, did have some half-decent possession, but created absolutely nothing out of it. And before you know it, they're suffering the same vulnerabilities as Dortmund do on the counter-attacks, just about 100 times worse. As so often, they often have Marvin Schreiber in net to thank for keeping them in games. He also pulled off a couple of good saves. If there are highlights at Cologne, it's the performances of Jeff Chabot at the back. He is impressive, and, you know, one of the few players who probably would slot into another Bundesliga team. But the quality is quite simply missing, so it's only a matter of time when FC don't create anything themselves, and they end up going 1-0 down, as they did predictably from a counter-attack, which came from one of FC's own free kicks. So yeah. Predictable stuff in the end. Thought FC did get a bit better after the break. But yeah, all a little bit too little too late. And I mean, Luka Waldschmidt's missed penalty was particularly bad.
Yeah, I guess that really just leaves Köln in this really awkward position, doesn't it, Matt? Because, like, now they're in this, I mean, unless there's some sort of miracle, the best that they can hope for, I guess, at this point is really the promotion relegation spot. But even that seems a far distance now. But so if they do go down, I don't want to count them out completely, because I don't want to jinx this. Don't want to write the post-mortem on a club if they still have a small chance of survival, and have seen crazier things in the Bundesliga happening. But we do need to mention it. If they go down to the second Bundesliga and they have this transfer ban hanging over them, the financial situation isn't great. Where are we at with all that?
The ironic thing with Cologne now is that one of the biggest issues that they have, i.e. the transfer ban, which I'll explain, in a weird way has actually contributed to sort of helping them balance the books financially. So it's a strange caveat. Also, it must be said that if they are to go down, I think a lot of Cologne fans would probably prefer to go straight down rather than having to go through the risk of a playoff and potential relegation at the direct hands of Fortuna Düsseldorf. I think the irony has been lost on absolutely no one in Cologne that could happen in the same year that Bayer Leverkusen win a treble. It's a pretty galling perspective for a lot of people. If they were to go down, the situation has actually improved financially a little bit in the past year or so. The debt that Cologne had, particularly as a result of the Corona crisis and the loans they had to take out to get them through that, they're expected to have been balanced out and paid off by summer 2025 at the latest, at least according to the CEO Christian Keller. This means that Cologne have managed to sort themselves out financially a lot quicker than expected. They posted a profit of just over 12 million euros last year. It's expected to actually be even higher than that this season, so they are profitable again. So that issue has been largely sorted out. But like I said, the caveat to that is that they've been helped by certain sort of caveat situations, the main one being that they've not actually been able to spend any money because they've had this transfer ban. The transfer ban was imposed on them in December. It was confirmed by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Cologne were found guilty of tapping up a Slovakian youth player by the name of Jaka Chuba Potocnik. He was just 16, and now he's probably 17 or 18. Well, yeah, effectively, Cologne were handed a two window transfer ban. So that was January 2024, summer 2024. It'll be lifted again by January 2025. Of course, by that point, Cologne are likely to be back in Division 2, which means that as much as the club is profitable again and therefore no longer quite in danger of absolute bankruptcy. I mean, if you go back 12 months or so, there were serious concerns that a relegation combined with transfer ban could leave Cologne in a situation of fighting against relegation to Division 3. That danger has, by all accounts, largely been warded off, and the hope would, or indeed the expectation would be, that Cologne, at least by the middle of next season, if they can manage to keep themselves in mid-table in the second division, that money would then be available, that depending on the actual league situation, maybe to add some more Bundesliga quality to a second division squad and make a push at promotion, depending on the league situation. We all know how volatile that second division is. A run of results can send you flying up the table or down, depending on how things go. So, like I said, on that level, the situation has improved somewhat. One other added financial thing just to mention, that another reason why they're likely to be better off in about 6 months or so, is that one of the methods which the former CEO Alexander Werle, who's now at VfB Stuttgart, used to effectively afford the Corona help that they got, was effectively to sell off future sponsoring revenues, so future income from catering, from sponsoring, which is effectively, yeah, they used future income from this, I think, 2022 and 2023 to pay off loans in 2021, which meant they've not been able to use that income for the past two seasons. That will also no longer be the case, and they've got about 4 million more of that to pay off, and after that they'll be just about okay. Ultimately, the financial situation has improved a lot quicker than expected at Cologne. They are in a much better state than they expected to be. Then again, one of the reasons for that is that they've not been able to spend any money because they've got a transfer ban. So it depends how you want to look at that. Is that a positive for Cologne or is that a negative for Cologne? Certainly, I think the fears of the absolute complete insolvency catastrophe and going the same way as potentially the way 1860 Kaiserslautern almost went, Schalke, the danger there, that's probably not quite the case any longer. For Cologne, so that's
for Cologne. Yeah, I was gonna say if Schalke. Schalke is still in a lot of trouble.
We can talk about Schalke another time. Yeah, but like I said, the fears around Cologne was that it absolutely could go a similar way. As I understand it, the danger probably isn't quite as threatening, as existentially threatening in Cologne, at least anymore. Nevertheless, it does sort of beg the question as to where it leaves them. And one thing that has surprised me throughout this whole year actually has been how relatively calm things have stayed around Cologne. It's a notoriously volatile club and a notoriously volatile atmosphere that the fan scene, the ultra scene, the membership are among the biggest in Germany. I mean, by members, Cologne are the fifth biggest club in Germany. The ultra scene is one of the biggest in Western Germany. And in the past, there've been massive highlights. People, might remember them taking 20,000 fans away to Arsenal. But then again, they've also had the moments where they get relegated, and there's a wall of black smoke behind the terrace, and the fans are all kicking off. So it can very much go in all sorts of extreme directions in Cologne, positively and negatively. This season, that's not been the case. It's been, like I said, the support and the membership, and even the media situation around Cologne, which is also a very volatile media landscape, which remained relatively calm. I think there was a slight danger, by all accounts, of the atmosphere sort of tipping over a little bit last week when they got beat at home by Darmstadt, which it wasn't a game that I was at, but by all accounts it was an absolutely shocking performance, and a bit of a blow on the back of that 2-1 win over Bochum, where they came back and scored two late goals, where people sort of thought this is like the big push that Cologne could have to maybe try and save themselves, but then to follow that up, also a decent performance in Munich despite the defeat, but then to follow that up with the defeat at home to Darmstadt was pretty galling for people. Nevertheless, all around town you have these posters which have been put up by the ultras saying "Yes, FC." So give gas, FC. Come on, FC. Effectively means that there's no resignation here. So it's a quote from it's a lyric from a song. So there's very much, support, stable solidarity behind the team. I would put that down to the fact that I think there's a recognition that even if Cologne might lack the quality, particularly in the final third, as we talked about, I don't think anybody around Cologne would question the player's attitude or the attempts to play good football, firstly under Steffen Baumgart and then now more recently under Timo Schulz. No one questions the attempt, no one questions the will to win. I think that was obvious in Mainz yesterday. I think with the exception of a few idiots launching things at Nadim Amiri when he was trying to take corners, obviously that's pretty ridiculous behaviour, but can't count for everyone. The support has been solid, it's been loyal, it's been loud, and no one's been, it's not felt on the edge as it has in previous years. And this is a club who, they do have a lot of experience in relegations. If they have to go down this season, it would be their seventh relegation since 1998, which is impressive given that before that they'd never been relegated before. Cologne, no stranger to relegation, and now it looks like they're on the brink of a seventh one. Obviously not ideal, but also, as I said, financially, potentially, and touch wood from a Cologne point of view, not as existentially disastrous as it was perhaps suspected 7 or 8 months ago.
I guess too, the other good news here, Matt, is that they haven't exactly a lot of players that are desirable by other teams, so they'll probably be able to keep the squad mostly together in the second division, because they will have to, because you can't exactly sell off price assets and bring in new players with a transfer ban.
Yeah, there's a couple of names who, I suspect Jeff Chabot, like I said, the central defender, would probably be one player who would move on. Other contracts are likely to run out. Mark Root is a player who I believe his contract wouldn't really be feasible for FC in the second division. I don't know how many takers there would be. He's descended into a bit of a journeyman striker, hasn't he, in the past past few years? Pretty unspectacular spells with Schalke, now at Cologne. Nevertheless, when he came on the second half against Mainz, he's been injured for a long time, but you do see that he does have a level of Bundesliga quality that perhaps the rest of the FC squad doesn't necessarily have. There are some half-decent young players coming through at FC who, if they're able to stay together in the second division, could potentially form the core of a mid-table Bundesliga team in future. I think the likes of Fink Grefe at full-back, Farid Ali Dou going forward. But it's a difficult situation. one of the stats that came out regarding Cologne's actual squad was that as a result of some of the saving measures which Christian Keller, the CEO, has put in place since 2022, and then, again, this is all a response to COVID, that Cologne have actually ended up slashing their squad budget by about a third, leaving them with the estimates that the budget was around 40 million euros, which would put them in the bottom three budgets in the Bundesliga. So perhaps, at least from that perspective, it stands to reason that they would then finish in the bottom three of the table. But it also means that at least when the transfer ban is lifted, and if Cologne are still have a fighting chance of doing something in the second division next season, they would have access to a budget which would be among the top three or four in the second division at the very least. You would think.
It's so very tricky, isn't it? I look at that second division, and I wrote something on Kaiserslautern and Schalke last week on the Substack, and their respective financial situations, and Kaiserslautern a little bit better off than Schalke, but not by much. If they go down, for example, then it'd be a very tricky situation. Now, it looks like both could actually stay in the second division, which then, of course, also means you have to add another team like Köln. Hannover is still there. HSV look like they're spending another year down there. That second division is loaded in terms of big teams, quote-unquote big teams, because obviously they're not as big as if they're down there. Düsseldorf failed to get promoted, for example. You can add them. Hertha Berlin is another one. I mean, it's so tricky to get out of there. And if you are not in, if you're in the sort of place that Köln find themselves in, that could be a long time coming back.
The fear is there, and I think no one's under any illusions as to what can happen. The examples are there, in particularly in HSV, as to what can happen. That they're now likely looking at seventh consecutive second division season. It's obvious to everyone how it can go. Nevertheless, there is, as I understand it, general support for Christian Keller, the director of sport. At least from a business and financial point of view, there are doubts about his record in the transfer market as a more squad building sporting director. And there are suggestions that perhaps somebody else would have that role. Cologne don't necessarily have a specific sporting director in terms of squad planning. A lot of the squad was put together by Keller together with Stefan Baumgart. So I think there can be criticism level at Keller, particularly in regard of letting Elias Skiri go on a free, and not bringing in any adequate replacement. Jonas Hector also retired. Okay, you couldn't do much about that, but no replacement was brought in. Timo Horn, was no longer the number one goalkeeper, but a big presence lost as well. There are absolutely questions that can be raised about the squad building at FC. Yeah, but then again, whether the budget would allow for another official in a sporting director role to work in between the coach and the director of sport, the CEO, Christian Keller, is another issue. The reports, at least since yesterday, since the game in Mainz, are that Keller is likely to stay on board. He's been rightly praised for balancing the books, sorting FC out financially a lot quicker than they expected, albeit, like I said, with the caveat that he was helped by not being able to spend the money anyway. And questions have to be asked about that as well, about how, obviously FC continue to dispute they did anything wrong in the situation with Potocnik, the Slovakian lad, but ultimately they've been found guilty and the transfer ban was handed out. That's what you have to go on, and therefore questions have to be asked about how on earth they got themselves into that situation where they can be found guilty of tapping up Slovakian youth players from Olympia Ljubljana and being found guilty. Questions have to be asked, don't they, about how professional that is.
It's the most Köln thing ever, I would say. The Kölner Klüngel is something that we make a lot of fun of in Munich, and rightfully so. It's fitting that the club is acting the way it is, I think, considering the city they're from. All the best in the second division, I guess, Matt. We'll follow the situation. As I said, I think it's important to note that they're not relegated yet. Darmstadt is the only team to be confirmed as relegated. So this is all about the promotion relegation spots and the relegation spots. And then, of course, we'll find out who the teams are going to play for that final Bundesliga spot once the dust has settled on the Bundesliga and the second Bundesliga. Want to wrap it up here. As always, the show is brought to you by Bet Online, and Stefan already mentioned it. His Substack is going to be on this whole Tuchel situation. Looking forward to that, Stefan. Matt, I'm sure you have another great Substack coming up. And then, of course, my Substack is as always on Thursday. We have the Champions League recaps, two big games for German teams, and then also Leverkusen, of course, their semi-final. I guess we'll have to start figuring out what we're going to do with that. But yes, we'll be back soon with more content. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.